The OCD Stories is sponsored by NoCD. NoCD are dedicated to creating a better everyday life for people with OCD by making care more accessible, more connected, and more effective. NoCD deliver exposure and response prevention sessions with an OCD-trained therapist directly inside the NoCD platform, done over face-to-face video conferencing. In the US, NoCD now accept insurance from insurance companies including Cigna, United Healthcare, Regents, Premera Blue Cross, and Blue Cross Blue Shield, among many others. NoCD can also help out with out-of-network reimbursement if they currently don't take your insurance. If you want to find out more, call NoCD's intake team to find out if they currently take your insurance in your state. You can do this by going to go.treatmyocd.com/theOCDstories or by clicking the link in the episode description. Now on to the episode. Hey guys, and welcome to episode 228 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, in this episode, I got on Mary Lynn Kiefer. Mary Lynn is director at Made of Millions Canada. And if you want to find out more about Made of Millions, she does explain in this episode, but also I did an episode recently with Aaron Harvey, which you can find in the show notes. And I got Mary Lynn on to talk about Made of Millions, but also to talk about her OCD story. And we go into a lot of depth, including themes such as existential OCD and suicidal themed OCD. So for those interested, I have recorded two podcasts on those themes specifically, and the links again will be in the show notes. But I enjoyed hearing Mary Lynn's story, and I really appreciate her taking the time to share it with you guys and myself. So without further ado, here is Mary Lynn. On the podcast today, I have Mary Lynn Kiefer, director at Made of Millions Canada, who has kindly agreed to share her story with us. Welcome to the show, Mary Lynn.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here, and I've listened to you over the years, so happy to be part of this.
Oh, well, thank you. And thank you for wanting to give back. So if you've listened over the years, you'll fully well know what's coming next, which is your OCD story. So as little as much detail, it would be good to hear that.
So yeah, I mean, I was officially diagnosed with OCD in the fall of 2017. So it's only been a couple of years, but definitely something I've experienced throughout my life, but more so, you know, in my mid-20s until now. And how it first manifested was really with intrusive thoughts around just like walking on my way to work and thinking, oh, I could just go and jump in front of the subway right now, because I walked past a subway station every day. And it's hard to articulate exactly how the thought came up or why it came up, but it definitely kind of threw me for a loop and made me question if that was something I actually wanted to do. Mm. And so that kind of stuck with me for a while and was on my mind for a period of about a month of whether or not this was something I actually wanted to do. And I couldn't quite figure out what the answer was. And as far as I knew, I was happy with my life and all of this stuff, but just couldn't get out of my head. Anyhow, fast forward like a year and a half after that initial experience, it's kind of on and off of that question in my head of whether or not I was suicidal. I never suffered from depression. I definitely suffered with anxiety and like panic attacks in the past, but depression was never something that I necessarily identified with. And so it was a confusing time. And essentially for about a year and a half before I got the official diagnosis, I was just literally trapped in my brain trying to figure out if I was depressed, if I was suicidal. How that looked for me was I would look online for hours and hours a day looking at characteristics of people that were suicidal to kind of check off reasons why, like, oh, I don't have that characteristic, so therefore that must mean that I'm not. And it doesn't, like, none of it ever really quite makes sense, but there was this one article in particular I remember that gave me that relief of, okay, no, you're not suicidal. And obviously it's a heavy topic, and so it was a really tough time, and I didn't open up to anyone. I would say to like my sister, like, I don't know, I feel like maybe I'm depressed. And she just didn't really understand it because I am quite like, you know, I do well with whatever work I'm doing at the time. I was working for a large international law firm at the time and very active in my community. And there were just no other signs there. Yeah, so I guess as I was saying, it was a year of being quite miserable, trying to basically find an answer that I could never come to the right, nothing was satisfying enough for me other than that one article. But I remember closing my office door at work and just like scanning the internet for an answer. And also like I had a half an hour walk to and from my office, or I'd take my bike. And so that entire ride home and ride there, I was just in my head ruminating on this topic. And it wasn't that I was afraid that I was going to do it. Like I knew I wouldn't, but I just needed to know if it was possible that I ever would. And for some reason, I just needed to know that for sure, that I would, that I just wasn't somebody that wanted to end their life. And so, yeah, and then it came to a point where I had more like existential type of questions, because I thought, well, maybe if I figure out exactly why I'm in this world or what the point of life is, then maybe I won't have to answer that. Like, maybe if I answer the existential question, then I don't need to answer the question around whether or not I'm suicidal. So anyhow, so eventually, a year and a half of pure misery, I confided in my sister and went to the doctor and kind of told him exactly what I was thinking and exactly what I was experiencing. And within a day of being referred to a psychologist, I was diagnosed with OCD. Of course, it was a bit of a relief because, you know, I now had a name for it, but still had that doubt, because that's what OCD does. but yeah, I guess that's kind of like, for the most part, I would say what my experience was over that year and a half of being quite severe.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing. And with that one article that you found particularly relieving, so did that ever get to a point where that article just didn't give you the same relief anymore? Like it almost lost its effect to calm you down?
Yeah, I think so. And it was also that article, it would give me relief for maybe an hour, and then I was back.
Okay, rereading it, or
or just ruminating again. Or it would, my brain would come up with another, like, oh, but I can't remember what the article said, but it would just question some of the points that I had said. Oh, yeah, that's not me at all. And then I would question, but is that me? You know, would I ever, you know? So it just became very exhausting and just not a way to live, and really painful just to be totally trapped in your mind on one subject matter that's just going in a loop of like not even making any sense, but you just can't stop.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And how did you find, because you said there, you know, you'd shut your office door and kind of read whatever it was online, how did you find kind of focusing on your day job when all this was going on in your head?
Yeah, so I was able to multitask, and I had been, so I was a marketing and business development manager for this law firm for Canada. And I had been doing it, I guess, for 4 or 5 years. And, you know, there were a team of people that helped me do a lot of the projects that I was working on. And so I managed to stay afloat. And I think my work probably did suffer, but no one really noticed. And like, I would just go, like, I would switch on and off, right? Like, if I was in a meeting, I would do what I needed to do to be present and to get stuff done, or do what I needed to do to do the deadline. But then as soon as that was over, it was like, okay, now I can go and do this research. Or now I can go and just be in my head. Or I would listen to like so much kind of like self-help stuff because I was just thinking, oh, like maybe this, like I just like am depressed and maybe, and nothing, it just made it all worse, you know, because I was just trying to solve a problem that wasn't really there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess what comes to mind, and we've talked about it before, the episode I did with Charles Brady on suicidal themed OCD, and you know, you mentioned there in your story how you said, quote me if I'm wrong, but you said something like, I don't want to kill myself, I don't want to commit suicide, but there's, it almost sounded like them, but then there's that other part of your brain that's going, but what if? Which is the doubting part, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and it was also like I knew I wouldn't, but I wanted to know if I wanted to, which I laugh because it just is so ridiculous. Like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
You know? And I just needed to know because I think if I knew, then I could put in safeguards to make sure I would never do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I, as far as I knew, I didn't want to, but my brain had that doubt.
Yeah, and I think I just flagged it because it's just a great example of OCD, regardless of theme, of this, you know, I know the door's not contaminated, or I highly think it's not, but what if, you know? I know I didn't just hit someone with my car, but what if? It's that crazy what if part of the brain that just you, it's really hard to argue with or calm down. And I think the way you said it just really brought it to life for me.
Yeah, and I think it's hard too because part of the reason I wanted to come on here was because suicide and, you know, thoughts of ending life and all of that is obviously something a lot of people experience that also experience mental health issues. And so it's really confusing for someone with OCD that's experiencing it to open up even within the community because people say, oh yeah, I've had those thoughts before. But it's like, but it's different because we're stuck on it, you know, and we're stuck on trying to figure out what it means. And it's not just like a passing thought. And so it's a hard one. I know that the theme doesn't matter, but it is, you do find a bit of encouragement when you hear other people that have, you know, have had the same kind of thought process.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's very relieving and comforting when you hear other people with the same thoughts and compulsions. So yeah, it's great that you shared this. And yeah, and from the existential point of view, so that was one of your other themes. I just wondered if, because that's something also, I mean, I have done an episode on that recently with John Hirschfield, but it's again not something I hear in people's stories a lot. So just anything you'd want to add to that theme?
Yeah. So for me, how it came up was like as almost like a secondary thought. Like, I just wanted to kind of know what the point of life was. And I more so was wondering if I was having like an existential crisis or... and so really Googling a lot about the point of life and things of that nature. And also I think during this time, it was just realizing that life was so fragile and like just really analytical about what we're all doing in this world. And like something, you know, that obviously comes to mind for a lot of people, but it was just the extent and the amount of time I'd spent thinking about this. And it takes away from your life because the small routines and the small things you're doing in life, when you're having these big thoughts, it really makes everything quite like it ruins every moment because you're just wondering what we're all doing here. And so that was, just another added layer to the suicidal OCD, but I would say like the suicidal OCD was definitely more prominent.
At what point
did your family find out, and kind of what was, if they have, how, what was the reaction of that?
So, I mean, I have a very close family and very supportive family, and I think what's interesting is that I had a lot of shame just because of the nature of my thoughts, but when I did finally decide to get help and opened up to my family, they were really supportive. It took my dad a bit more time to understand what was going on, but he did eventually. And they were just really supportive, and like they didn't really take on my OCD, and they, which helped me because they didn't believe it. So, like they just would kind of treat it like those are just thoughts, and that helped me for whatever reason. And at the time when it was really bad, I spent a month with them, and I just kind of had taken time off work and just kind of spent quality time with them and did stuff that they do in their life, like gardening and cooking and baking and just going back to really simple basic things in life. And that really helped me kind of just come back to reality and be in the present. And I would just share articles and stuff with them, obviously Intrusive Thoughts and your podcast and a few other resources really helped me. And so I would share things like that with my family so that, they could understand it a bit more. And my mom has pretty bad anxiety, so she's learned a lot about herself in my recovery as well, and some CBT tools and stuff. So it's been overall like quite a positive experience, I think, with my family and just getting closer with them and working through some other mental health issues that we've had within the family with anxiety.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful that it's kind of had this knock-on effect, and other people in your family have learned stuff about themselves. I think that's wonderful. And so, yeah, so you saw the psychiatrist, was it, or psychologist when you got the diagnosis?
Initially, it was a psychologist, and then,
Psychologist,
yeah.
and then psychiatrist. So yeah, so you're on the medication, and then any. You mentioned CBT there. Was that what you did for therapy?
Yeah, so I did a combination of medicine and then CBT for OCD. But I will say what I think helped me the most was, yeah, that. I was lucky enough to be able to take time off work and just kind of just spend time with people I really care about and my nieces and nephews. And I got to like play with them and do crafts with them and just doing activities that were really simple and really got me back to reality. But also I went to a few peer support groups in Toronto, and that really helped me a lot, just being amongst peers and hearing them. Although I didn't really meet many people that experienced what I was experiencing, the whole process of OCD and how it works was so relatable, regardless of the content. And then meditation like helped me enormously because I can shut down the computer and cut that compulsion out relatively easily now because I know that that's a very much a outward behavior, but rumination is something that is really challenging. And the only thing that helps me with that is meditation.
Okay, cool. And is there any sort of, how do you do the meditation, I guess? Are there any apps you use, or is it more just sitting down and following your breath?
I use Insight Timer.
Okay.
I really like Tara Brach. And then I did a meditation research study through one of the OCD clinics, or really one and only OCD clinics here in Toronto, where they used the Muse app. Are
Oh,
you
yeah.
familiar
I've
with
heard
the?
of it, but
Yeah,
yeah.
so Muse, it's like a headset, and there's an app on your phone, and the headset kind of has I don't know, I'm not going to explain it properly, but it basically senses like the thought, your sound waves or whatever in
Like
your brain.
brain activity and stuff.
Exactly. And so you get feedback through the app. And I did that for like 2 or 3 months. And because it was a study, I had to do it every day for 20 minutes. And oh, it was amazing. And it helped me a lot, like during and after. But I'm sure, as like with anything, it's like exercise. So it really is only helpful when you actually have a practice of doing it. So I go in and out of the practice for sure.
Yeah, no, understandable. It's so when you started meditating, how did you find, because I know some people with OCD, well, just generally people who try and meditate, but especially with OCD, you can have these thoughts and sometimes they can be very overwhelming and very quick. How did you find when you initially started meditating, what it was like kind of, you know, being in that space with those thoughts?
Yeah, so I think when your OCD is really severe, it's really hard to sit in a meditation. I know for me, you know, the medication did help a little, take the edge off a little bit, so that I was able to start that practice. But I will say that, you know, I then had gone off medication, and there was a period where I kind of had a relapse, and it was really difficult for me to meditate during that time. So I don't know what the solution is. Maybe exercise. I swim as well, and I find that's its own natural medication. And meditation as well. Just doing laps and kind of keeping a schedule, that helps me a lot.
Yeah. No, thank you. That's useful. And it's good that you share that about meditation, because it's also validating for anyone who's finding it tough to meditate. And sometimes it's just not the right time, you know, for many factors. So it's good to share that.
Yeah. Yeah, because I would say I don't necessarily experience like those like random intrusive thoughts. It's more so when I'm stuck like constantly. Yeah. And so for me, even though I don't have like these intrusive thoughts that pop up a lot, it's like I'm just stuck on a subject matter. And so when I'm meditating, it's like, oh, you just have more time to do it, to think. So yeah, it is about timing and where you are and how clear your mind is to be open to that.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing. And I guess, where are you at with OCD now? You know, how does it affect you day to day? And yeah, how do you deal with it?
I'm doing pretty well. I think for me, you know, I have also listened, like Mark Freeman has helped me a lot. And, you know, that whole value-based approach is really key for me. And so despite what might be going on in my life or in my feelings or in my head, I am always kind of working with my value system and making sure I'm spending time doing things that I care about. And it's challenging and exhausting sometimes. Right now, you know, it's a tough time just with what's going on in our world, and a bit more triggering for me. But I've definitely got to know myself a lot more, Ernie, and just have had a lot more like trust and faith. And I just know how to rely on myself more. And I think before, I always looked outwards to get that comfort and that safety, whether it was through relationships or through work or reassurance. And now I've learned to like go inward and rely on myself. And so I'm doing well, but you know, tools like meditation and remembering what I value and where do I want to spend my energy thinking about this for an hour, or do I want to like go and do something I actually care about right now and have that in the background. And sometimes it feels like an exhausting workout, you know, like how Mark often associates like working out with the mind as well. And it definitely feels like that, but it does get easier. And I know for myself right now, I'm having a lot of anxiety, and I just keep reminding myself, like, well, it's because there's a lot of change going on right now, and it's okay. And like, it's okay to feel this way. And just saying that to myself gives me a lot of peace and, like, I guess, hope that it will pass.
Yeah. Yeah, no, wise words. Okay, so what would you say was like a big epiphany for you in your recovery journey, just where something clicked for you?
I was actually, I do have a moment. and I was actually driving with my mom one day, and this was probably a few months into like my recovery. And everything was fine. Sun was shining. We were having a nice time together. And I had an intrusive thought, like existential in nature, like what is the point of all this anyway? And it was disturbing for me because that's my theme, and that's what really pulls me in and takes me away from the present moment. And I remember thinking, like, nothing has changed in this moment. Like, I am still here with my mom. I'm not in danger. The only thing that changed was that thought that just came up in my head. And nothing needs to change unless I latch on to that thought and go deep with it. And so that was kind of like a moment of separation from my thought, I guess, of like, oh, like my brain can come up with stuff that I really don't need to pay attention to, because it can take me away from moments that are quite pleasant. So that was my epiphany.
Yeah, I like that. I've definitely had those moments too, where you just realize, whoa, this is my brain just talking rubbish. Like, what's going on here? And you can be, for that split second at least, you can step back and see the brain's weirdness and randomness for just kind of like brain vomit.
Yeah, and it's like, why would we want to go into that when we're just enjoying a drive in the sunshine? You know, why do we choose that?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's hard sometimes to not get pulled in, but yeah. Okay, so similar question though, which is, was there like a roadblock in your sort of recovery journey, and if so, how did you overcome it?
Yeah, I mean, when I had a relapse, that was a really tough time for me, because I thought I had learned so much and really was in a, going in a good direction, and that was a pretty massive roadblock. But it was also kind of a time where I realized, like, this isn't going to just disappear, and it might be something I have to deal with for a while for my life. And so what I did learn from that, though, was I tried to do all of the exact same things that got me out the first time, meaning like that got me on my road to recovery. So I went back to my parents for a month, and I was like trying to meditate and trying to like bake and cook and spend time with my nieces and nephews, and it wasn't working. And I was like, why isn't this working? Like, this worked the last time. And so what I realized is, like, I was treating it very much in a controlling kind of way, and wasn't really like taking any of the tools that I had learned. And so I had to take a different approach and just kind of take it day by day and really dig deep. And I got through it. But yeah, I guess relapse doesn't have to be so scary, because the more we kind of try and get out of it, it just becomes another OCD trap.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that made sense.
No, it did. It did. Thank you for sharing. So, of course, you're now involved with Made a Millions. And for those of you that listen to the podcast for a while, you would have heard me talk with Aaron Harvey, who originally created Intrusive Thoughts, which is now, I believe, integrated into Made of Millions, which is his new initiative. Mary Lynn, just it'd be good to explain Made of Millions better than I just did, and just how you're involved with them and what you're doing within Canada.
Yeah, so I mean, Intrusive Thoughts was a site that I definitely used a lot, and so that's how I came across Aaron and his team. And when I found out that they were launching this broader initiative, Made of Millions, that was really going to be not only looking at OCD, but also mental health challenges across the board. I reached out and wanted to get involved. And so Made of Millions, I mean, it's an online, part of it is an online platform, so madeofmillions.com. And essentially it's a place where you can find educational resources on all types of mental health disorders. There's a lot of video content. There's a lot of personal stories. So if you like to read people's personal stories, that's a good place to find them. You'll find all of the articles that would have lived previously on Intrusive Thoughts on our new Made of Millions site. And then what's really cool is a new project that we launched on there with online live programming. So if you go to the main page, there's a calendar of events, and we just launched it in the last week or two. But essentially, we're collaborating with different various mental health advocates, clinicians, they were doing live streaming on various topics as it relates to mental health. Some mental health advocates are joining us and doing a series. So just earlier today, a girl by the name of Windsor Flynn, based in San Francisco, yeah, she's an OCD advocate, and she did a talk on maternal minds, which focused on postpartum OCD. I'm hosting a live stream next week that's going to be looking at intergenerational trauma, so not related to OCD, but a topic that I think many people are interested in, something new that's coming up these days. So really a wide variety of topics. And so it's really acting as like one kind of hub where you can find mental health resources across the board. And then we also do a number of other initiatives. A large part is focused on the workplace, which is where I do a lot of the work. We do a number of events, different campaigns. So overall, though, the mission is to change how the world perceives mental health.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's great to see the work yourself and Aaron and everyone involved are doing. I love the OCD stuff on there, but obviously it's more than that. It's many other conditions. It's great to see all of that being brought together. Okay. So yeah, I'm eager to see how you guys develop it, and good luck with it over the coming years.
Thank you.
No worries. So general question now, which is just words of hope for people with OCD.
I think, you know, one of the beautiful things is that there is such a wonderful community out there. So if you're listening, and this is like the first kind of place you've come across, there's a lot of people out there that that can relate. I think OCD gives us an opportunity to really learn more about ourselves and really dig deep and be able to live a beautiful life of a lot of joy and meaning. It's just a matter of coming out on the other side. And there is a lot of work that needs to be done, but it's very possible. And I truly, you know, some people ask, would you rather be born without it? And I don't think so, because it's definitely shaped the person I am. And I like who I am, you know? So, yeah.
Excellent. No, thank you for sharing that. Those words, I hope. So, a couple of questions now is, if you could pick up the phone and call your 20-year-old self, what would you tell her?
Hmm. I would say to start that you're strong and that you can look inside and find that inner strength. And to not look outwards to feel better, but to look inwards. And that it was going to be okay.
Yeah, good words. Okay, and you've got a billboard in Toronto. What do you want written on that billboard?
I've heard you do all this stuff, and I never really thought you were going to ask me. I don't know why I thought I was going to get away with it.
It's a tough question.
A billboard. You only have this moment.
I love it.
Yeah.
Short and sweet. Cool. Well, look, that's my question. So, thank you so much for going into detail in your story on the suicidal theme and existential theme. Not often talked about, so it's great to share that. And obviously your work with Made a Million, so thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. It was fun chatting, and obviously it's a heavier topic to talk about, but I do it. I've shared my story, I've written it before, and I've had a number of people reach out from around the world, and just it sounded like they hadn't come across anything like that before. So I think the more we can talk about it, the more it helps people. And so yeah, hopefully some people will come across it, and hopefully it will resonate with them.
Absolutely, I'm confident it will. And one last question is there anything else I haven't asked you that you wish you wanted to share?
No, I don't think so. Just like, thank you for everything that you do. And I know everyone else thanks you, but honestly, like, I know that you have a lot going on outside of this. And, it's just incredible, the amount, like, just the resources that you've now created for people, in the community. It goes above and beyond what we can get in a clinical setting. And so, yeah, I think it's amazing. And, you're really like a voice for the OCD community, so thank you.
No, thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it. And yeah, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
So there you have it. Thank you so much to Mary Lynn for sharing her story and to you guys for listening. I appreciate it as always. And don't forget, today's episode is sponsored by NoCD. To find out more about NoCD and their treatment plans, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories, or the link will be in the description of this episode. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Until we speak, take care.